This is my lifetime investment. I have four of these, okay? And I don't want to deal with the politics, the legalese. I'm talking to you as a mother. My name is Jacqueline Gilmore. I'm the mother of a young lady who's now in college. Last year, in her senior year, she was contacted by a 3 times convicted sex offender. You may have seen the television ad 90 Days that we did this past fall. This person contacted our daughter through a message he left her at high school. From a series of text messages, he tried to lure her out of our home at 10 o'clock at night. He was dating a pregnant 16-year-old student. He tells people he's 21. He sexually assaulted another 16-year-old classmate. He's been doing this to the girls, the young girls in her town, for years. He was caught with a 13 and a 15-year-old girl in a local motel after he raped one of them. His intent was to bring them to Lowell, Massachusetts, and sell them into prostitution. He was released on parole last June for these offenses. He was convicted of misdemeanor sexual assault and simple assault on a 16-year-old, thank you, and is currently serving 2 years for that conviction. Knowing that SB 500 was in the works and coming up, and it would reduce his time for his parole violations, the 7 years remaining on his parole has now been reduced to 90 days. I'm sorry. He waited in jail at the taxpayer's expense until this bill went into effect. And he successfully delayed his parole hearing until mid-October. 7+ years he was facing, reduced to 90 days. And by the way, he's 31, not 21. We're here because this isn't a political issue. It's personal. And we're here because you realized this bill was wrong and you promised us you'd fix it. We're here to ensure that those promises made in October happen. The mere mention of SB 500 leaves a nasty taste in one's mouth. It's the get out of jail free card for those inmates who should not be released into our communities. Those released have recommitted or violated their probation, have gone back to jail for 90 days. As written now in its present form, HB 524 merely excludes violent and sex offenders from the benefits offered by SB 500. Required? Yes, but it's not enough. It doesn't fix it. It merely puts a Band-Aid on a hemorrhage. There are far-reaching consequences of this bill. It doesn't affect just the public safety. It affects the prison population itself, the prison guards, as you've heard in previous testimony, and more pressure on the probation and parole community. There's a lot more country north of Concord. We don't have halfway houses or anything north of Concord for these people who are getting out from the Berlin or the North Country facilities. When you have an incident like the one this past November in Berlin, where a guard is held hostage, no radios are working to help, to call for help. One slashed in his face. And the inmates are standing around chanting SB 500. SB 500. And they know that they can do it and they can get away with it. They act with impunity. and chaos reigns, and it did. And it's happening not just in that facility. It's happening statewide. How do you think they're going to act once they're released? We do agree with the 9-month supervisory aspect of SB 500. It's a good incentive, and it keeps a finger on that pulse. Committee members and sponsors of SB 500 tried to take portions of the other state's successful programs to create the SB 500 bill in order to address the high recidivism rates in our jails and prisons. It was verbally presented to the House and the Senate as addressing nonviolent offenders when in fact no inmate is restricted. No one read the bill. I'm here today to put a face on the real victims because we are. We're not alone either. We've been contacted by families of the previous victims. They're deathly afraid when these guys get out. Why are inmates being released into our communities with no supports in place? We hear now that they're just getting those programs and services up and running. It's not happening where we are. Where are they going to go? And how does this bill make us safer? Imagine a domestic violence victim whose abuser is released on parole, and the victim knows that he's out, and she's in fear of a repeat beating. Do you honestly think that that victim will come forward to file charges when he violates parole by making contact or harassing her? Do you think she'll come forward to testify against him, knowing he will merely get 90 days? Imagine what he'll do when he gets out the next time. How many other victims of crimes will come forward to testify against their perpetrators? We have a close relationship with our 4 children. No, they're not kids anymore. I was involved with all their school and church plays, activities, sports, music, ice hockey, field trips, like a lot of parents, you included. We taught them to respect others, treat people the way they would like to be treated, and they were always taught to be aware. And we're lucky. We openly discuss the facts of life, what kind of people are out there, and who they can trust and rely on. When someone enters your personal space uninvited, you have a right to insist they back off. This experience really threw a monkey wrench into that illusion of safety. When something like this near miss happens in a family, it unsettles that feeling of security. It exposes one's vulnerability. And to shore that up again, it's difficult. When you're in a group of new people, you don't think once or twice. You think several more times if you really want to make a new friend. Our daughter loves to write. When she was applying to colleges last year, I submitted a short story just out of hand to her English teacher, and I asked her opinion on the quality of her writing. Imagine my pleasure when I received a note saying, "Jackie, this is worthy of an MFA, which is a Master of Fine Arts writing." When this event happened to our daughter, I encouraged her to write about it, how it made her feel, and what impact it's had on her. I thought it would be cathartic for her to get beyond her feeling of betrayal by a classmate and to understand the support of her family and friends. She can't do it. You can see, you can see a physical stiffening of her body when we discuss it. She has a lot of anger about it, knowing that one of her younger class and one of her younger classmates was eventually assaulted by him. How do you come to terms with something like this? How many more silent victims will not come forth, and how many more young people will be lured by sexual predators with a near miss? What happens when that predator doesn't miss? We ask your consideration and your due diligence to make each and every bill a good one, one in which the intent is positive and doesn't fail us. Ensure our children and our citizens the safety that they deserve. We're the victims, not the criminals. Thank you.